Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
That's right. We're 7-3-9-4-2. You can send a light, 347-637-3942, if you want to call in and talk to our guest tonight. This is Rachel Sitek, attorney at law for Ohio. She's going to be on in a few minutes. So, welcome to the American Allegiance Show. I should say that, right? I got to say that. So we're going to take our best. Welcome to the American Vision Show. We are coming to you live, simulcast, four different places, really, and on the radio show. Hope you guys tune in, and this is always going to be available. This link is everlasting. It never ends. You can go back. I think there's like 2,000 shows on this network, the Patriot Nation Radio Network. That's what you see right here. Here we go. I'm not very good at this. Patriot Nation Radio, okay, out of Florida, broadcasting all over the country and other countries as well. Shout out to my fans and my friends in the Philippines. I used to live there with you guys. Netherlands, different places, everywhere, Mexico. It's amazing, the people that write you on the show. So thank you very much. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. So I'm going to bring my guest on at this point. My guest is Ms. Rachel Sitek. Did I pronounce her name correctly? Okay. Let me unmute you. Okay. Ready? Okay. Can you unmute? All right. Oh, welcome to the program. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Thank you. Awesome. So tell us about yourself and what you do and what you're going to talk about tonight, probably.
Yeah. So I have a private practice in Cincinnati, Ohio. We service clients across the state of Ohio. A lot of what we focus on here recently has been education and employment law. And when you're looking at education and employment law, it ends up bringing a lot of issues related to free speech, constitutional issues, racial diversity, religious diversity, and discrimination on the basis of race or religion as well. So a lot of that comes down to helping employees navigate through disciplinary proceedings, helping students and their parents navigate through disciplinary proceedings. We've seen teachers that are targeted for their religious views. We've seen students that are targeted for their political leanings. And so it's been what a time to be alive and in this field. It's been exciting.
I can't even imagine that. So tell us about your education.
Yeah, so I grew up in Anderson Township, which is a suburb of Cincinnati.
Okay.
I then went to Xavier University, and I was with a commute while I was working my way through undergrad. And then I went to UC, which is the University of Cincinnati. If you're not from Cincinnati, then you probably don't know that UC and Xavier are humongous
rivals.
Right. So I always tell people, do not even ask me who I root for during the crosstown shoot-off, which is our huge basketball throwdown. It's so hard to decide. And then at UC is where I met my husband. We're law school sweethearts, and we got married in law school, and we've been married for 4 years now.
Well, congratulations. You know, my nephew went to the same college he went to undergrad. Then he went to Notre Dame for his law degree.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
What kind of law does he do?
He does corporate law, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So he was a defense contractor, but But yeah, it's amazing. This kind of stuff you go through to get your degree, and you have to drink in all that stuff. That's amazing. And I'm glad. I'm sure you're glad you got out of there with the degree.
My husband and I always say it was so easy to find each other because on the campus there were very few other constitutional conservatives. So when it came to finding someone else that thought the same way, that made it really easy.
So, yeah, you mentioned constitutional, and that's a lot of what we talk about in this program. And I think constitutional is the law of the land. It's not anything new. It's not something you can change. That is the law of the land. And that's what people don't seem to understand. We are not a democracy. So we have to be what we are or go somewhere else. Because I've been to other countries where there are democracies, and you would want to live in a democracy. You want freedom here. Right.
I was just reading the other day about Leah and about how he was held so strict to this concept of the Constitution being dead. It is dead, dead, dead. And someone that doesn't know anything about the Constitution is probably like, why would you say it's dead? Why would you say it's living? And the other side is like, well, because when it's living, then it's changing and it's morphing and it's shaping and course whatever is happening to the time. But he really understood that this was a document that was the greatest, formed the greatest country that was ever created and was the greatest document that was ever created to rule a nation. So,
absolutely. That is so true, so correct, because I've been to a lot of other countries that are not like that in my military career.
I was so excited to come up to that.
Oh, man, no way. Awesome.
I just want to hear more about that, like going overseas and going to different places. I think that gives such an amazing perspective to living here and a gratitude.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so surprised. I'm very happy that you did, and that's pretty awesome. It just blows me away a little bit, you know. It's like that book opened so many doors for me in my life, time and everything, and meeting different people, and I appreciate it. Thank you. That's awesome. So I have been a lot of places, and I don't know if you've been overseas a lot or if you had that chance to do that yet, to go different places.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Right. You're busy now. You're doing adult things now.
Well, we're trying to pay back those student loan debts.
Right.
How much time to travel.
Right. So what do you want to talk about tonight? We're talking about CRT is one of the things, and this is where the mama bears and the papa bears are at the school boards. And I think the school boards are probably the first place to stop. If you want to get elected somewhere, that's where you need to go. I don't know what your thoughts are. Tell us what you think about CRT and give us a little background, what you know about it, since this is one of your specialties.
A lot of friends that have been working from home, so they got that opportunity to kind of be with their kids or in the kitchen while their kids are working on classwork on the computer at the kitchen table, or they're in their office and the kids have to share a space because they have soft-side access to the internet and everything. So it's kind of in that time frame that I think a lot of parents started actually hearing what was being taught in the classroom, being available to help their kids with homework more, and from there saying, you know, I don't think I really agree with what's being taught, and having the time at that point, not making a commute back and forth from work, to actually go to school board meetings and have a say in what happens and to hear when things are voted on and to speak at the public comment portion. And from there, we started having parents that said, like, not only am I upset with what's going on, but I think that I actually need to get an attorney involved. One example of this is that I was an attorney for a group out of Worthington, Ohio. Their school board had issues with trying to get the school resource officers out of the school. And the school board was actually successful in doing that. So this group of parents, they filed public records requests. And the public records request kind of went back and forth. They were never really responded to. And so then the group had hired an attorney to represent them and to take the claim to the Court of Claims, which is where you go when you have a public records request that's not fulfilled. It was at that point that we started getting some publicity from Channel, I think it was 6, ABC 6 News in Columbus, and we interviewed with them twice. Once when the school actually, after the initial news interview, they went ahead and gave the public records that we were requesting. So first they complied after parents had to go through all that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we had another interview with them because unfortunately after they removed school resource officers from the school, there was a fight that broke out at the school. And it was exactly what these parents were trying to prevent. It was their worst nightmare that they had predicted that was coming true, which was there were no school resource officers on the campus to help the student that was being attacked. Very sad.
Wow. That's crazy. That doesn't make any sense.
It really doesn't. And it all stems from one of the school board members saying that we have to be an anti-racist school. In order to have the school exist, we have to be anti-racist. And I think that it's kind of at that point that I began understanding more about this is the kind of consequences that come from anti-racism, which stems from, you know, people started reading about it when Ibram X. Kendi wrote his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And then you see more and more authors coming out that talk about this. But this was just a great entry into seeing the consequences of this kind of thought pattern
mm-hmm.
and of this kind of ideology.
Well, it sounds like they're trying to be something that should come natural. They're fitting themselves in with a hammer instead of, you know, it's common sense. It's something you don't do. It doesn't make any sense to me. Well, we got to be this. Well, how do you try to be something that you're supposed to be already? And you're not going to turn everybody into a non-racist either.
Yeah, and you know, understand when they hear that word, they think that it means what it sounds like that it means. Which was, you know, the topic of one of the reels that I made is just like, let's understand that this word sounds like literally not a racist, against racism. But what it actually means is a very specific method of opposing or trying to oppose or pretending to oppose whatever they're doing, racism, whatever it is, it's not working.
Right.
So, I mean, but it's not. It's a specific method that says that we need to tear down structures, we need to tear down, we need to put in place racism in our present in order to overcome racism and discrimination that has happened in the past, and we have to discriminate in the present in order to prevent discrimination in the future, and that's not the way it should be. We shouldn't have to discriminate in order to overcome discrimination, because what that looks like in effect when you follow Ibram X. Kendi's book is that we're supposed to be racist towards the race that is in majority, and then that is supposed to reorder things.
Oh my God, no. No way. No, that makes no sense. And I graduated in 2017 from college, and it's kind of like the same thing. They were saying the same thing in some of these classes I was in, that, you know, you can't be racist if you're black because you don't have any power. Well, that doesn't make any sense to me. I know a lot of blacks that are racist or that talk racist. But your people are people. All humans are the same. They're going to hate somebody no matter what. But it's sad when racism comes in. So tell me more about that.
You're right that this is something that we've seen for years and years and years, and it's kind of scary to see schools that may try to put in, we've seen it on college campuses, in college campuses where they have white-only spaces or white-only training, even as close as UK, we've seen it at Berkeley, I believe, as well. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if this generation necessarily understands that this is exactly what was happening in the 60s, and I have grandparents that lived through that, and I have great grandparents that fought against that, and we're going right back into it again. We're inviting it in, and we're saying that there should be white-only spaces for the alleged purposes of overcoming discrimination, but we've already seen that doesn't work. When you have separate, it's inherently unequal, and unfortunately, when you have a generation that's not learning things from that perspective, it's only being used to promote a certain agenda, they're not getting the entirety of history at all.
Yes. Respect one another. I think that's what it should be. And because you have a lot of division, like you have the Black Student Union versus, you know, there's no white student union. I've never seen that. But it's just, you have so much division, you know, fraternities, sororities, by color. When, you know, I think, hopefully that's changing, but it was really bad, you know, back when I went to school. I started in 1986. So, yeah, a lot of division, even on TV. But now we're seeing, you know, things change. Thank goodness. You know, you see interracial couples such as yourselves, and they're making that the norm. And I like that, but sometimes they're over killing it a little too much.
All commercials.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, I always say that it is correct that representation is important, but what we kind of see happening now in an attempt to really shift and change culture is we're seeing a representation that's not actually accurate.
Right.
I think that if someone were to come to America and were to just turn on the TV and had never been there, had never, you know, seen things about America on TV in another country, they would think that we had a very, 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 very sizable population of not only an LGBT community, but an LGBTQ community that was Black, that was Hispanic, that was, you know, this is the smallest of the small portion, but we have a representation that's coming forth on the TV that's not accurate. And so, you know, for good or for better or for worse, it just raises the question, how interested are we in our television shows and our TV shows reflecting reality versus promoting a message or an agenda that we want shared? It's worth considering and thinking about how we want TV and pop culture to really be reflective or to shape. Is it supposed to be influential, or is it supposed to be something that's based in reality? Is it supposed to be reflective, or is it supposed to be something that is really altering what we think about the world around us and the populations around us?
Yeah, because you see these game shows, they have to have one African-American, maybe two. They have to have a gay person. They have to have all these things, or a couple. They have to have every single one of them. You watch, like, Amazing Race and Big Brother and all that stuff. They have to have these people in there to represent from the very first show to the last one. It's always been that way. And it's like an agenda kind of thing, like, this is normal, this happens. So, and translate that to the schools, because the school's different, you know. School's different than when I went, probably when you went too, because you have a lot of influence. You have teachers teaching the kids that racism is real and it's still around. And the truth is, I went to school and racism back in the 70s. We had that when my dad got out of the military. I saw a lot of that, but kids are cool today. I mean, they have Black friends, white friends, and they hang out together. So what's your thought on that, and what's going on in the schools right now?
Kind of for those that aren't familiar with it, when you're looking at things from an anti-racist perspective or through the lens of critical theory, what gathers the clout to be able to speak on a topic or an issue or voice your opinion is the more intersections that you can gather. The more intersections that you have, the higher you're able to build your bully pulpit. And so if you are white, cisgender, able-bodied male, then you really have no boxes to build up your pulpit. You have no intersection. But if you happen to be a Black, female-identifying individual, you happen to be disabled in some way, if you happen to be overweight, if you happen to be attracted to women, if you are also economically disadvantaged, these are all things that you can gather to where you have a belief pool that you're able to stay for. The ironic thing is that anti-racism depends on allies to help build these pulpits. And so you may have individuals who have quite a bit of intersections but don't really feel like voicing an opinion or may not feel the same way to be anti-racist, but that's okay because we've got allies that are here to speak for you. They will lend their voice so that you do not have to worry about it. We don't have
to right in your mouth. Right, so, right.
That's kind of how my husband and I ended up getting into this the space where the more I would speak out in my alma mater community in Anderson district, the more that I was getting attacked. And so I wrote this op-ed about how it's really the allies that are supposed to be being allies to a race or a cause.
Right.
But when a member of that race speaks up, they want them to show.
That's right.
They're not really going along with the message that the allies have been there to do. I'm here to do a job, and you're getting in the way, and you're doing my job, so I'm going to slice your mailbox in half.
Really?
And I'm going to say horrible things about you online, or say that you're just a puppet of the Republican Party, or whatever it takes to shut you up. Whatever it takes. So.
Shut up and color. Stay within your own lines. That's what they're telling you.
The editorial for a community member for the Cincinnati Inquirer, and someone had commented, and made comments about how my hair was, and it's straight, and I doubt that what she's saying even holds any water because, you know, her hair like doesn't even look natural and stuff. Someone wrote, they're like, is she too uppity for you that you're saying all that? Like, you know,
No.
Supposed to be here for black people, but you're doing that by attacking black hair. Like, that doesn't make sense. It's the left eating itself, as my husband and I said.
Yeah, exactly. They are eating themselves, and they're stereotyping too. That is, it's racist. What they're saying is racist. You're supposed to be like this. Black people are supposed to act like this. I hear that sometimes, even on conservative radio stations. They talk about blacks like they're all the same person. And I think that's terrible, and that's what the left does. They, just like my book, if you don't act black, you're not really black. You know, all the politicians tell you you're not really black either sometimes. Or they pretend like they're friends of blacks, but they know what you like. They all know what we like, we fall for, right?
Well, it's what happens is that a politician is able to depend on a group of people to vote for them no matter what. And at that point, they don't have to work for your vote anymore.
Right.
I'm wondering why this problem or that problem isn't fixed is because they don't want it to be fixed. Because the more that they can say, I'm going to fix the problem, and the more that you say, okay, I'll vote for you, the more that they stay in office. Nobody wants to fix the problem because then they don't have something to fight about when election season comes up again. And if we keep voting for the same people over and over again, then that's what will keep happening. Keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you got.
Yeah, problems are good to have when you play that game. So you always have problems, you never have a solution, you just keep it running. Okay, in schools right now, tell us about CRT and what you as an attorney, I know you're interested in that. How does that affect the kids? As far as, are they turning the kids monolithic racist or anti-racist, or I don't know what you're going to call what you call it or anything, but how does that affect them? They just want to be kids. They don't know. They're not paying attention to color or skin unless somebody teaches them that.
Well, when we see that applied to the school context, what we see is that there are children who come into school who may have one white parent or black parent at home. They may come from a multi-ethnic family that's made up of many different backgrounds. And when they get to school and they learn this frame of mind and this ideology, and then their teachers say, all right, now go pick up your block, well, they aren't really sure what to do because In one frame of mind, they're supposed to pick up the oppressed block, the black block, the Asian block.
No.
And on the other hand, they're supposed to go pick up the white block, the oppressor block. And so then they are left wondering, is one of my parents the oppressed and one the oppressor? And how do they come together as that? How am I raised and how do I fit into that? Honestly, that is not something that any child in elementary school should ever have to
This is real?
This is real.
Wow. No way.
And then on top of that, you know, there are teachers who are in school who are going through the same thing, not at the same level of maybe that kind of questioning, but they are finding themselves emotionally and psychologically affected by the anti-racist training, which goes in the face of everything that they feel towards their fellow humans.
Mm-hmm.
They do not see. They don't look at their children in their classes and see children that are oppressed. They look at children that they seek to empower and to help make capable. But if you're told that you need to help that child realize their oppression and realize that they are an oppressor before you can move forward in teaching them, that's something that a lot of teachers don't agree with and that actually can cause an emotional stress. And
yeah.
there's a case that's out of Virginia right now. I know that Virginia is a hotbed of things going on in their schools, but there's a really great case out there that's in the courts right now for a teacher that did experience a lot of emotional distress from being called out, called names, ridiculed, just tormented while in school, and the school is going through this anti-racist program.
Wow. You know, that's got to have some kind of psychological damage to the kids who are the oppressors or called the oppressors. They just want to go to school. Then don't give people the upper hand by race. This is like total division of the kids. I think it's the worst thing. Just let everything play out, you know. Let, you keep your racist. If you're racist, keep it to yourself, you know, as a kid or as an adult. Right? Don't bring this up in school. And you've got to confuse the kids for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I think that there is a fact that schools can address things that come up. I know that there will be times when students that come from households that teach values that don't support and encourage other students come up. Maybe they come from a household that that is not really being mindful of teaching kids about the world around them and really just teaching them to value each person as an individual.
Right.
But, you know, I think that the school needs to deal with that as it occurs and in a way that helps students value each other as individuals with a unique background, not as a part of a stereotype and not as a part of something that they've seen on TV, because I think those were the two most harmful sources that I could ever had as a kid, was for other students at school to come into the school after seeing things on TV that were alleging to represent black people, or hearing things at home that gave just a glimpse or an aspect of someone's experience with black people, but it didn't feel reflective of me. That kind of experience, I think, was the most harmful, and it sounds like that's exactly what CRT and anti-racism seek to do, is not to value each person as an individual, but to teach children in a blanket manner, and to help everyone in this group and this bucket is an oppressor, and everyone in this group and this bucket is oppressed. I can't think of anything worse.
Wow. I mean, they're dividing people by race. That's insane. I do. Yeah, it doesn't work out that way in every school district. Like some school districts, when I was younger, the black kids oppressed the white kids. It was a different. It was completely turned around. So I can't believe this is happening. So what are the things are going on besides that? I know there's like they're showing like graphic sex manuals and things like that in schools. I don't know if they have those in Ohio. I know I saw that down in Florida. And Florida is like probably a free state, but they're infiltrating the schools.
Yeah, and I think that the sexual education and preventing Planned Parenthood curriculum from coming in is something that has been being fought for a long time. What we're seeing here more recently is really teachers and the curriculum kind of being a door for those kinds of things to come in. We have cases in Ohio where teachers are introducing literature to the curriculum that involves graphic passages,
mm-hmm.
that has a lot of overtones of ideology that's involved in it. And it's one thing to, in school, present a balanced curriculum where different positions on issues are presented and that the children walk away with a balanced understanding of the information that they need to make decisions. But it's another thing when you have students that feel uncomfortable with the content of what's in the book, with the sexual graphics of the book. And you know, if those students feel uncomfortable and they want to tell the teacher that, we have to deal with that student wondering if they're going to get a lesser grade.
Yeah.
Are they going to be, you know, discriminated against for being difficult in class, or will the teacher think that they just don't want to read the book because there was content that involved an LGBTQ+ character? You know, you never know what is going to be the discrimination that is going to come in, that's going to come out of having really graphic and not age-appropriate content and brought to the classroom without the parents knowing, without the parents being able to discuss it with the children and give them permission. And even if they don't get permission, we're still seeing those kinds of issues with, you know, feeling like the teacher may not like them anymore because they're not reading.
That is exactly what I experienced at Wright State University. you lose points if you don't go along with their ideology. A lot of kids will go along with it just to get the grade. I was the bad guy. I was the adult. I was older than most of my professors, so I gave it back to them. I don't care. I didn't care. What have I got to lose? I had a military career. They don't mean anything to me. I actually tell them, I said, I'm paying for this class, okay? I don't care what you think. I'm just here to get my degree. So what you're saying right now is parents have lost control of their kids' education. That's what this whole thing is about. All these things that they're putting in there, and then that's what I think of the school boards, and they go to the school boards and they complain, and then now the guy in the White House says, hey, we're going to stick the FBI on these crazy terrorist parents, so their hands are tied. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that insane, you know? And
it was just heartbreaking to read the stories of how that all unfolded. Honestly, it has been just working with clients. I mean, I love working with angry mama bears because they have a fire inside.
Yes.
But when this happened, I think that really parents have just gotten so sick. They were tired of co-parenting with the government and the government telling them what they can and can't know about their kids or prevent their kids from seeing or watching while they're in a school that their taxes are paying for and it's run by people that their votes got in office. They're sick of it. And so I'm hopeful that public schools can still be a place where parents are willing to keep going to the ballot box if someone's not doing a good job voting out and be at all of the parent meetings that you can be at all of the school board meetings that you can be at, that's my greatest advice for a parent that is seeing all this unfold and still have parents and still have students in public because we have to be vigilant. We cannot, as one attorney that's brought into a situation, oversee everything that's happening. So one that sort of boots on the ground in a school district, especially in a state like Ohio that has a very high number of municipal governments and school districts, it's one of the highest number of local governments that a state can have in Ohio, actually. And so it really takes people who live in the area, who know the lay of the land. Dealing with the school district is guerrilla warfare. You have to know the lay of the land. You have to know what you're dealing with. You have to know who the people are that are sitting on the school board.
Yeah.
You have to know what their relationships are with the individual who you are considering suing. Because I tell parents and new school board members and new administrators all the time, like, you may be upset about what the in-house district attorney has said, but he may be next-door neighbors with the school superintendent. You do not know the connection. You have to know the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. I like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've interviewed people running for Congress from different states and even governor, but the biggest issues are the school board candidates. There's so much there in the way of trying to break up that thing, that monopoly they have.
Yeah.
And the best thing, I always say this, the best thing that ever happened through the pandemic was people saw what was being taught to their kids in school. They opened a lot of eyes. People, and they're hiding this stuff. They don't want anybody to know. And now they're giving them options that they don't need to have. Like, maybe you don't want to be what sex you are. Maybe you want to get a, you know, change, sex change or something. Or you can dress like this. There's so much, I'm going to say this, evil in the schools right now. And
yeah. I have said it before that you're going to look at what your child is learning. Anti-race, how to be an anti-race, is a so-called anti-race. There for you to see. It's not a bullet point on your syllabus.
Right.
It's not going to be there. It's going to be baked into the layers of, maybe what training that the school is having the teachers go through, maybe what activities that the students are doing in class, what topics that the teacher is encouraging them to pick out for their research project. You have to be there and available to your child and, you know, talk about what happens during the day. Because a lot
right.
of times,
yes.
the cases we have come across, it's
yeah.
not just because of a conversation in the car after school.
Oh, wow.
It's not just a conversation.
Mm.
Your kids feel icky about something, talk to them why they feel that way, because it may come from something that happened in class or something that was said. I mean, we got a student in our local district that was told to sit his white privilege butt down. I mean,
nice.
I hope that students go home and they talk to their parents about what just happened like that, because they should talk to their parents about how that makes them feel, and that's who they should be talking to about that, not someone at school, not someone who has been assigned to social emotional learning. They need to talk to their parents. They need to talk to their legal guardian.
Wow, absolutely. That's excellent advice. Nobody knows. The kid goes to school. People had no idea what was going on when they were at school, and they had no control over it. And that's why, I mean, it's happening all over the country. I love watching the mama bears and the daddy bears confront the school board. And the school board is like, they don't care. They're like Teflon. They drum people out. They don't want in there, and they're getting more funding for these crazy projects, and they're making money that way. So money is like the root of everything that's going wrong. In D.C., all these little governments, all the way down to the school board, that's what they're getting paid to do what they're asked to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you know what? I think the reason why I love the mama bears and papa bears is that when I was growing up, I don't know where I would be if I hadn't had a mama bear and papa bear. Everyone,
yes.
something happens.
Right.
I say all the time, like, I oppose anti-racism as a solution to racism. I never allege that racism doesn't still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through it in school. As one of a handful of black students in my class, I was never called an Oreo. I never dealt with that. But mm-hmm. I did have parents who were up there for every other name in the book. The N-word, you know, Shaniqua, those are all racial slurs, and they would be up there. And I know that my parents would be up there, too, if they had been teaching this kind of curriculum in school. Mm-hmm. The thought that they would be, that the school would be telling their daughter what she would be limited and able to do, what, how she would be oppressed, like, no, my parents would be up at that school telling them, no, absolutely not. You're not telling her that. She can be anything that she wants to be. And if I hadn't been raised in a home that said that, and I had been raised in a home that said, you know, you are oppressed and you're going to be limited in whatever that you want to do, there's nothing wrong with dealing with your child on what's going on in reality and what reality that they'll have to face. But to be told at an elementary school age they are going to be limited in anything that they want to do when their opportunities truly are limitless at that age, absolutely
right. Yeah, you're right. And I know some people that feel that way anyway, kids get out of school. I mean, they don't see the choices. Sometimes that's a cultural thing where people don't push their kids. But, yeah, you can't do that. As the teacher, as the staff, you can't do that to kids. The kids are impressionable. Even I mean, you get this all the way through high school. Once they get to college, and it gets worse in college. I don't know if it's worse. But it's the same. It's all the same.
Yeah, I think another aspect of you have this pressure cooker that happens, especially when you look at starting into like middle school and high mm-hmm. school, of bullying that happens.
Right.
So when you look at, when you add to this hormonal pressure cooker of emotions and just disappointment and highs and lows mm-hmm. of high school, and you look at the cliques, and you add into that pressure cooker, you sprinkle on in this anti-racism crap that's telling kids that they can call someone an oppressor or they can exclude someone because they said something that was a microaggression. Well, you're just adding to that
right.
culture.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that that kind of opens the door for us to talk about how then the hot topic of the day, things like cultural appropriation come into this, is that, you know, recently there was a show on Dr. Phil that discussed cultural appropriation, mm-hmm. and there was a girl on there who experienced death threats and bullying and all sorts of things because she had worn a dress to her school dance that was deemed by the court of public opinion to be cultural appropriation. And so I think that we're looking at some very, very dangerous, volatile, hostile bullying environments that are coming about as a result of these kinds of ideological thought processes and opinions. We really cannot start, we need to encourage especially young people, but also a lot of adults,
right.
think through these kinds of ideas through to their logical end before we jump on that bandwagon. Because if we can't carry it out to the end, then we probably shouldn't start going down that road. So in the case of ideal of cultural appropriation, you know, we can't figure out the answer to something like, what is black culture? I think that's several times in your book.
Yes.
That you ask a professor, what is it?
Yes.
What does it mean? Give me a definition.
Yes.
Because that's what, you know, I point out in Reels is that before we start having a discussion, an argument, or an effort at persuasion, we really have to be on the same page with the terms and definitions. And that's the problem with cultural appropriation. That's the problem with a word like black culture. Is it like, what does that mean? What is that definition? And there really isn't one.
Yes, because right.
What it's used for is a weapon.
I like that, yeah.
It's not used to help anyone mm-hmm. understand.
Right.
It is used to tear down those who are not in line mm-hmm. with the agenda or, you know, whatever that is, tearing down systems. systemic racism or all any of that. And then it's used to tear those individuals down, to label them as Oreo, sellout, race traitor, self-hating. Those are all things that are mentioned in Ibram X. Kendi's line of ideology, is that if you are those things, then you are a black face without black thoughts. And if you don't have a goal of helping black people, then we don't need you. Well, many of the individuals that they're excluding from those efforts are passionate about helping black people, but not about helping black people in the way that Ibram X. Kendi lays out, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Wow. Well, that you just threw my book back at me, too. So, I mean, I like it. I mean, this really gets to me, because I say things like the things that I said in the book, what you just brought up, they're from the heart, because they're part of me, and it's hard to explain. You are something that I just got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore, because that's pretty much what it was back in, you know, in that transition. That right there was like, it just hits you hard. You're supposed to be this. I'm not that. I want to be myself. I don't want to be appropriated to what somebody thinks I'm supposed to be. Just not everybody's the same. And then the black culture thing, yeah. My example was a guy in Utah was adopted, and he's black. Is he part of the black culture? No answer. You can't, because it's all, they're like this. This is what they are. They can't see anything outside of that.
Yeah. And I will say, it was such anyone who is interested in it, you can read it quickly, because it's kind of easy to read, no matter what kind of level of education or background that you're coming from. What I will say for those that find themselves in the situation that you describe is I think that my encouragement to them would be to not allow those, black or white, to define what blackness is to you. Because there is no answer for what is black culture, what is white culture, and you certainly shouldn't let anyone else define for you what blackness is. You know, I think about how what hurts so much about stereotypes or feeling excluded or feeling like that I didn't fit in at school was that I hadn't really come into understanding, I love myself. I love who I am. I love that I'm black. I love the experiences that it has granted me, the empathy that it has granted me, and what the pain that I've been through has allowed me to gain as a human being. I truly believe that I was created by God in this skin to be this way. And I think that once you realize that identity first and foremost, and that you were created this way for a reason, then you can say, your combine of what is blackness does not define me. You are not going to tell me who I am because you think that I am not black enough. My blackness cannot be put in a box.
Right.
So it's there's nothing that they can do or say that can take away from who you are. It's an immutable characteristic, and you are created this way. So rather they want to define as black, we are all real black people.
Yes.
We are all real black people. We are all here with the same thing with life as we are.
Uh-huh. You're preaching now. Yes, you're preaching. Exactly. Yeah. It's disrespect. Like I said before, what it is, you're disrespecting people, you're making assumptions, and you're putting them all in the same box based on what they look like. But if you're in between, like you said, you have one parent that's African-American, one that's white, then you have a lot of conflict in the kids. And the one that identifies as white or black, they have their conflicts themselves because people judge you based on what you look like. It's so primitive. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it's reinforced on TV. Black people act like this. Whites are responsible like this. Blacks are doing the rap and the whole thing. All these movies, it's the same thing. So it gets reinforced. everywhere, unfortunately, but we can stop this. It doesn't have to be that way. You know, especially today, kids are up. Now they're kind of like bringing that to the kids. They're bringing the same thing. Seems like with the appropriation, this is how these kids, and they expect them to act like that. It's just a strange experiment, it seems like. I don't know, who comes up with this stuff? Who's doing this? Who's behind the scenes of this?
You know, I think it's multi-level. But I agree with what you said, that it's disappointing in pop culture, more so even I think when maybe when I were growing up, in that I can remember being a kid and just thinking, like, can I just have a black movie without it being a black movie? Like, I feel like when I was growing up, there were so many movies where it's like, if all the characters, all the actors, everything, everyone in the movie was black, then it was necessarily centered around something that culture or media has decided is the sign of black. So it has to be about someone's in jail, someone's this, someone's that. Like, can I just have a story that just happens to have black faces? I think that that's kind of also a factor in why we see a lot of these characters that, you know, Disney or whatever is flipping to a different color. You know, it's really that people just want to see regular stories that they've seen before, but they feel like the representation isn't there. But we really don't need all the virtue signaling to do that. I feel like there's enough creativity to go around and come up with more stories and things with just representation in it. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard. Let's just make some movies with people of different colors.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. Don't give them a special role. It's just like, it's Madea. Every movie was like Madea back in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s. And it's rare. The Cosby Show kind of stopped that, which is cool. Because even George Jefferson, I don't know if you remember that show, moving on up, his character was kind of crazy. He was a wealthy guy, but it was still... he wasn't acting right. And everybody's a straight man except for the black guy.
Just... he was always so unlikable.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like when I know that you don't like it, but I loved The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Like, so many people that were likable.
Right.
You know, it's like you don't relate to Carlton. But you may, a person still will find him likable. And I think that it's also important for people to watch the episode where Will and Carlton go to Philadelphia to do a community project. And Carlton and him have this moment where he has just had it with Will ragging him the entire time about, like, you know, he's so street, he's so much more black than he is. He says, I am black and I don't have to be anything that you're saying that I have to be black. It doesn't matter what I wear. It doesn't matter how much money I have. It doesn't matter. I am black, and my blackness can't be affected by what box that Will was trying to put in it. And, and a lot of what Will was experiencing and doing was his own feeling of inadequacy and of questioning himself and of struggling to fit in back in Bel-Air. And I think that, you know, a lot of times it came out at Carlton as disdain for, you know, whatever a lot of people would say was, you know, representative of wealth or whiteness or things that were going on. And so there were really beautiful dynamics and really serious moments that I hope that someone can, if they're watching it, can watch the series from beginning to end, because there's a lot of deep stuff.
Yeah, you know, you saw, I put that in my book. That was a perfect example of how, in my opinion, of how they put down the people in Bel-Air. They weren't hip enough to get anything done, so they were at the real black people put them down. And you know, somehow they got all straightened out, you know, the Will way. And it was like they're stuffy and, you know, they got all this education and everything, and it wasn't. They had to do their thing. They had the stereotype things they did. Will and his and DJ Jazzy Jeff, and it was kind of like a clash between cultures there, and it was kind of eye opening. I really liked that show. I mean, that's just like the Cosby Show. I liked it because it showed another side. And how black people can be. Yeah.
I love the mic drop moments where we all come back and at the end we say, like, you don't know anything about me. You don't know
right.
what I've been through or how I got to where I am today. Like, I deserve, you know, just to be treated with respect. You don't have to like me, but never think that you know me because you don't. And those moments where they were put in place, I think that it's so important that people see all those moments too.
And they came from the same kind of lifestyle that Will was in, and they made that, hey, this is what we did. This is what we turned into. We got our education. We did blah, blah, blah. We're living here, and he's a judge, and you're hating him. You're hating him, or you're saying that he's not right. And so the snotty-nosed kid from Philadelphia was disrespectful anyway. And so all the things you see, the stereotypes, they were thrown at that show all the time. And the wise, older people were wise, very wise. And so I like that too. You know, the older people from that same era or for whatever. So that was a very, very powerful show in many ways that, you know, you look back at it and you watch it. And it brings everything in harmony. It brings everything together. We can work together. We're not that much different. Now, if they were a different, you know, kind of, if they had a different attitude in Bel Air, or if it was another city or something less, then it would be just another Stanford and Son or whatever. But that was a great put together. I like how they did that. It's very good.
They like flipped things on its head anyways because it was like you have the interesting dynamics there too. And I think that Uncle Phil and him being Republican and his political aspirations, that all, you know, kind of comes in too. There is a stereotype that blacks, once they leave poor areas and they come to live in an area with more money, but then, you know, you have individuals like James Brown, you have lots of people who are celebrities or who are very well known who are black and who they then experience a change in what they feel about not only a financial outlook, but also a social and sociocultural outlook as well. And I think that, you know, it's so interesting that how that happens and how that disparaged. I was super blessed to grow up with parents who started out as default Democrats. Our whole family was Democrats. And, you know, we voted for people who we thought had our best interests at heart. But when my dad became a pastor, I'm blessed and raised by a Episcopalian pastor, and our family went with him in that growing and that understanding of how do we bring our political leanings and understanding in line.
Right, right.
That really reshaped how we thought about political things. We said, you know, how can we make sure that our political beliefs are biblically in line?
That is a big thing, because one party may like abortion, the other one may like something else, or LGBT. So I totally get that. My wife is actually, she's a pastor's kid. Family. So that's the, you know, I understand. And then there's a lot of pressure on pastors and everything, so that, and the kids, the PKs as well. So I'm going to let you go here. I know you got important things to do and things to study for, whatever you do, but I thank you for coming on. Tell us where they can reach you and people in Cincinnati.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on. If anyone wants to follow me, I'm at Cincinnati Christian Center on Facebook, and you can also find me on Instagram at RCTechBlog, and you can also find my website at www.rctechlaw.com or rachelctech.com. Thank you so much.
Oh, also, don't forget to mention your reels.
Oh, yes, my reels. I have reels on Instagram and Facebook, so either of those places you can find my videos with my takes on current issues. Today, this one on Stacey Abrams saying.
Oh, I got to watch that one.
She always was saying something else, but I have to respond to it. I can't help it.
You know, you got to do what's right. What's right is right, and when you cheat, then you have no respect for me. She should be in jail right now, but this is my opinion. So, all right, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Tell your husband I said hello, and thanks for lending yourself to me. And you have a nice night. Thank you.
Take care.
You too. And that was Attorney Rachel Cetak, just like the airport, I guess. And I wish her the best of luck. And what she's told us tonight is, like, amazing. I can't believe this is happening in school. This is, like, bizarre world. I can't believe the teachers and the school boards are teaching racism based on color. And that's the division. How can you do that to people, the kids? You know they're messed up. If the white kid is the oppressor or called the oppressor, and they have to pick up black first, and then whatever, and then all the way to the white for the last, for the, against the oppressors, and the kids don't know that. The kids don't care. Put that label on them, then you're messing them up. Big time. That doesn't make any sense. That's, like, unreal. So anyway, this program is brought to you by the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And we're happy to be able to bring the service, and we have a lot of guests on this program every week. Last week we had about six of them, but we're going to have a veteran show coming up on the 9th. We're going to have veterans. We're going to have people that can come in and rotate. We're going to have this. So on this program I'm using right now, you see the video. You can actually go in. I can give you a link, and you can come in and join the program. So I'm going to have as many veterans as I can because they deserve it. Be heard. Me as a veteran myself, I know what they go through and have 30 years. Anyway, that'll be it for tonight, and I appreciate everybody coming on and joining us for this program. And next week, we are having a special guest who's going to tell us about weight loss and how we survived being, like, he must have been like 500 pounds. I'm not really sure, but now he's down and he's working out. Let me see here, and to do some things here while I'm talking. And we will be back next week. So God bless America. Let's hope these things can be resolved that we saw tonight, things that we shouldn't have in our schools, things that the parents have no idea until the pandemic came. And, like, I always say that. The best thing that happened for the pandemic is the kids